This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Well, slow cookers are hot. The crock pot is back big time. I know some folks are saying it never really went away. But anyway, over the holiday season last year, these things were very, very popular. Today on the Afternoon Magazine, in this portion of the program, how to get the most from these handy devices. Slow cooker cook Diane Pellman-Good is our guest. She and Dawn Rank are the authors of the Fix It and Forget It cookbook, Feasting with Your Slow Cooker. The book features more than 800 recipes for slow cookers contributed by a network of cooks from around the country. The book offers a wide range of recipes, including recipes for breakfast foods, appetizers, soups and stews, main dishes, vegetables, desserts, and beverages. Listeners, I hope you'll join the conversation this afternoon. Do you have questions about cooking with a slow cooker? Perhaps you have a slow cooker recipe that you'd like to share with us. Give us a call. The number in Champaign-Urbana is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else you happen to be listening, you can call toll-free, 800-222-9455. The toll-free number, 800-222-WILL. Phyllis Perlman-Good has been part of many cookbook projects. Good and her husband Merle are the publishers of Good Books, a family-owned press based in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, that specializes in books on Amish and Mennonite cooking, crafts, and culture. The book Fix It and Forget It was first published in the year 2000. It went back to press six times in the first 4 months of its release. Very popular book. I have a copy of the book, by the way, listeners, to give away this afternoon to someone who calls in this afternoon with a question or a recipe. We'll get your name and number, and later we'll draw a winner for the Fix It and Forget It cookbook. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. Phyllis Good, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sure. Tell us how this cookbook came to be.
Well, a number of our staff were together, and we were brainstorming about what the next cookbook ought to be, and we always have a lively discussion about this because we have a lot of ideas. We love to cook, and we've been fed all kinds of ideas, too, by our friends and the visitors to our projects here in Lancaster area. And one of our staff proposed the Fix It and Forget It idea. She said, you know, slow cookers are back. And I was a little skeptical. I thought, well, yeah, 30 years ago when we got married, you know, that was quite a gift to have. But mine had sort of gotten moved further and further back into the cupboard, and I hadn't used it for a long time. And then as we talked further, we discovered that, in fact, as you said, they are back. And people said, well, you know, my friends have three different sizes. They have a 1-quart, a 2-quart, a 4-quart, and they'll do a whole dinner just all in the slow cooker. So we said, all right, let's test the network, and we have a lot of people who have contributed to the cookbooks through the years, and we sent out a solicitation letter saying, you know, if you have a recipe you would like to submit, please send it, thinking that, you know, I kept hoping, oh, I hope we get more than just beef stew recipes. You know, how many ways can you do that? And thought if we had 300 recipes submitted, we were lucky. Well, we got more than 1,200 submitted, and they came from all the varieties that you've mentioned, you know, from breads to even desserts, and then a large selection of appetizers and soups and main dishes and so on. And so as we sorted through them, we sent them out for testing, and we take our testers' evaluations very seriously. They came back, and through the sifting and the sorting process, we ended up with 800 recipes in the final edition of the cookbook. Mm.
And why is this book so popular, do you think? It's a bestseller.
It is. I think it simply is that it fits the way many of us live. We are very busy. We have many demands. Our family life is kind of fragmented. If we have children, they're often running a very busy after-school schedule, and we're trying to make sure that all of us are fed nutritionally. And, you know, you can live on fast food for a while. You can go out to eat for a while. You can pick up food on the way home and carry it in. But I think ultimately, many of us really want to eat in our own homes with food that we've prepared. We know what goes into these dishes. And yet the convenience of the slow cooker is something that can't be overlooked. And it's certainly an appliance that fits our lives. And when we discovered all of this active use of it by the very recipes that people submitted, it became clear to us that this is really the kind of thing many families, many households, whether you're single or just a twosome, can find very useful.
Did you make any interesting discoveries about regional tastes in food as a result of putting this book together, or is that something that you've discovered maybe over the course of all the cookbook projects you've been involved in?
Well, I think it became especially clear in this project because we do have quite regional recipes. You know, we have for example, a black bean and corn soup. Well, it's really very Southwest in the kinds of ingredients that it takes, and yet I go to my grocery store here in eastern Pennsylvania and find what I need. So there's a way in which we have the regional flavors offered in the cookbook, but they don't require ingredients that are so exotic that you can't find them really anywhere in the country. But, you know, for example, vegetable curry is here, shrimp jambalaya, Pecos River red Frito pie. So we have quite a number of German recipes and Irish stew. I was just impressed by how adaptable recipes are to this appliance. And it certainly is a fun cookbook to use because it does put you in touch with all of these many characters that make up this country.
I suspect, though, that the slow cooker is less popular along the East and West coasts. And I suspect that in the South and in the Midwest and in the Mountain West, it's more popular.
You're probably right, although it is sold very broadly and very widely. I think the people who will not be as interested in it are those people who really enjoy experimenting and doing more exotic and more gourmet kinds of cooking. This is a cookbook collection of recipes that are really comfort food. Many of them have a very short list of ingredients, comparatively so, you know, anywhere from 4 to 10 items that go into the recipe. The procedures are also very short. They don't require, you know, long hours in the kitchen to put together. And so I think people who enjoy experimenting and working with food in a more almost craftsman-like way won't necessarily find this their first choice of a cookbook. But people who are looking for stable, steady, stalwart sorts of dishes will find it very useful.
Let's talk with a listener on line one, someone waiting for us to talk with us from a cell phone. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thank you for the program. I guess my question is about vitamin content and nutrition. I think one of the reasons that these things probably fell out of use, at least among some of my friends, is that we're all trying to eat fresh and snappy and kind of semi-raw. So can you approach that question generally for a bit? Thank you.
Good question.
It is. I think if you're really interested in the texture and the brightness and the freshness of food, a slow cooker is not necessarily going to get that for you in the way that a stir fry or, a container that allows the food to cook very lightly and very quickly. However, we recommend in assembling these dishes that for the slow cooker that you put in the vegetables that are going to require a bit more cooking. You put them in first. You add the potatoes and the carrots and some of the beans that require more cooking. Then when you get home, add those vegetables that are best lightly cooked, for example, mushrooms, green peppers, peas, that sort of thing, put them in last. And if they're in there for 30 minutes, 20 minutes, they'll get softened a bit, but they'll still keep their main texture. And so it is one way to assure that some of the freshness is still present. But you're exactly right. It's not the appliance to use if that's what's of greatest interest to you.
Yeah. I would imagine, though, that the crock pot is very popular among vegetarians.
It is. And we have a whole section of main dish bean dishes, primarily for that reason. You can cook your beans from their dried state and get them to a point where they're ready to be mixed with other ingredients. And they are certainly very, very good for that kind of dish. Then we have many other dishes, too, not all of which require beans, but that are rather complete in their vitamins and nutrients and can be used by vegetarian eaters.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Savoy on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi. I just had a quick comment to make. Earlier, you said, the guest, that is, that it may not be more popular, say, on the coasts, or may not be more popular with folks that are interested in sort of being more experimental or gourmet or something. And I wasn't sure if you were referring to the sort of the slow cooker technique or the slow cookers or the book. And I wondered if, one of the things I noticed actually is, for example, in the most recent issue of the Bon Appetit magazine, there's a whole little article on the reemergence of slow cookers. And I've kind of noticed that in general in, you know, say, food publications and on television and such, that that the ideas of, you know, slow roasting things and braising meats and that sorts of things that are kind of consistent maybe with using a slow cooker have been coming a lot more in fashion. And it seems like one of the most recent trends, even in restaurants, are sort of comfort food types of things. And it seems like this is a really good time to have, you know, exposure to a cookbook like this. So it's not a question, just a comment. So I might look to try to get a copy of the cookbook. I actually enjoy experimenting with food a lot and bought a slow cooker even just a few months ago because I was just kind of anxious to try a lot of these kind of things. The last time I used a slow cooker was maybe when I was 12. My parents would have, you know, that kind of stuff. And it seems like it went out of style for a while, maybe when certain types of cooking didn't sort of demand that kind of long thing. But it seems like a lot of the current styles, in my opinion, kind of do emphasize those kind of slow things.
Yeah. Let me ask the caller. Caller, what have you found to cook in your slow cooker that you really enjoy cooking and eating?
Well, venison, for one thing. Any kind of venison roast, I think, extraordinary. Another one are any of the, the cheap cuts of beef, the kind of things that really benefit, I think, from a long time, you know, long marinating and then long cooking times, the kinds of things you can't cook quickly. I think there are a lot of cuts of meat. I think particularly things like, different kinds of beef roast, and I think venison is probably one of my more favorite things to cook in a slow cooker. I don't think turn out as well cooked any other way. That's my opinion. But those are the things I've enjoyed the most, at least.
Okay, well, thanks for the call and the idea about the venison roast.
Sure.
I might add, we have two venison recipes in the cookbook bearing out what you've said. And I noticed that Bon Appetit feature and was interested in that. And I think you are exactly right. It fits with the kind of urge for comfort and eating the familiar and it certainly does do very well with less expensive cuts of meat and game.
Let's thank that listener for his call this afternoon and go to another caller, a listener in Danville on the toll-free line. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My question is about dry beans. I'd like to know if there's any special prep before you put them in the pot.
No. Let me just turn to one here. We suggest that you can add the water and the dried beans and let them cook in the cooker from scratch. Let me see if I can find.
Are you talking about warm or cold water?
Cold water.
Cold water.
Yeah, and let them cook as long as they need to get soft. And then in some cases, the water is drained and replaced. And in other cases, the water is absorbed, and then you simply add to it whatever you want to dress up the dish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of two-step process. Here's one. You soak the beans overnight in 8 cups of water, and then you drain that and add 8 cups of fresh water, and with it, in this case, garlic, onion, ham hocks. Cover that, cook it on high, 12 to 14 hours, and then at that point, you remove the ham hocks because they've also cooked tender, and remove the meat from the bones, cut it up, and return it, and add the remaining spices in this case. Cover it and cook it on high another 2 to 3 hours, and it's ready to serve over rice.
Okay, now we're talking about possibly 16 hours?
In this case...
Total?
Yes, that's right. So some people do it overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'd soak the beans overnight, and then in the morning put the things together and turn it on, and you're finished.
Right, and then when you get home, you can add the additional ingredients if you want to.
Okay, now my favorite bean is the Great Northern. It wouldn't make any difference?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
The recipe I was just looking at calls for red beans, but I know that we have recipes throughout the book that have, here's one for pinto beans, another for dried kidney beans, all of which, here's a navy beans, all of which are very close to the recipe I just read.
Mm-hmm.
There's one on page 57 for the Great Northern. Wash beans, cover with water, and soak overnight. Drain, pour into the slow cooker, then add your ham, your onions, celery, tomatoes, carrots, whatever you want, and cook on high. Well, this one says cook on high 2 hours, then low 10 to 12 hours, or until beans are tender.
Right, so that would be one that you could soak overnight. Maybe do your 2 hours on high in the morning before you leave the house and then let it go on low the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can stay home and just enjoy
it. The great smell.
That's right.
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome. Questions, comments are welcome. If you've got a tip or a recipe you'd like to share that you enjoy doing at home with your slow cooker, give us a telephone call. Here are the telephone numbers, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else you're listening, you can call toll-free. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Our guest this afternoon is Phyllis Pellman Good. She is one of the compilers of the Fix It and Forget It cookbook, Feasting with Your Slow Cooker. My name is Celeste Quinn. And listeners, I have a copy of the book to give away to a listener who calls in this afternoon. So when you call in with your question or your recipe, we'll get your name and number, and later we'll draw a winner. Phyllis, have slow cookers, or I guess when I was growing up, we called them the crock pot, but have these changed much over time since they first appeared in the 60s and 70s?
I think they have. In fact, the cooker that I had and was given as a gift was just one complete unit. It didn't have a removable inner vessel, and so you couldn't immerse the thing in water to clean it up, which I think is one of the reasons that they just sort of found their way to the back of the cupboard. They had an impracticality about them, and it was really not fun to use when you got to the end of dinner. The new ones have a lift-out vessel, so that it's very practical, and what I've often found to work well is I can prepare the whole mix the night before. I take that vessel, cover it, put it in the refrigerator, and then in the morning I just lift it out, put it into the heating insert, and cover it, plug it in, and we're ready to go. And then that evening after we've used it and emptied it, it can be very easily submerged in water and washed very easily. So that in itself has made it far more useful than the old ones. I've seen divided ones so that you can actually do two different recipes at one time. Then there are other features. Some of them will come on at on high for 2 hours and then automatically cut back to low for the rest of the time of the cooking. Another feature that some have is that you can set a timer for it to switch on at a particular time. If the recipe that you're making only needs to cook for 5 or 6 hours, but you're actually gone for more like 8 or 9 hours, that will accommodate that kind of schedule.
And they also, you mentioned that there's a divided ones now. They're also, they used to be round, and that was it.
Right.
And you can also now get them in an oval shape,
yes,
which would, you know, give you room to put a small bird or
exactly, or
a roast in there.
Or, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, they accommodate cuts of meat that you had to always kind of figure out how to wedge into the round and smaller ones.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener in Urbana. Caller on line one. Hi.
Hi. I had a question about these new slow cookers. Do they still sell them that just have low, high, and not all those?
None of the fancy stuff?
I don't want all that fancy stuff.
They do, yes. In fact, I just got one. I've tried to sort of keep up on what's available now, and I just bought one that simply has three settings, off, low, and high.
Hooray, okay,
yeah.
So they still...
Yeah, it's not complicated.
All right, good. And then I was thinking about your cookbook. Since everybody has different brands, and is the high always the same high, and is the low always the same low?
Yeah, what's the temperature?
They're close enough, because in our testing process, we had people using all sorts of cookers to see that they would work. And generally, high is considered to be about 300 degrees, and low about 200 degrees. And most of the dishes that you prepare in these are not the kinds of things that are so delicate that it's going to be a problem, you know, one way or the other, if they're slightly higher than 300 or slightly lower. And generally, there's kind of a range of time given. Cook on high, 10 to 12 hours.
Yeah.
So it accommodates any variables in that way. Now, I have also learned that there are baking inserts. We began to get recipes for cakes and breads and that sort of thing, some of which said pour into your baking insert. And I didn't know about that, so I went exploring and discovered that certain brands do have, and often you need to order these. I've found that stores don't stock them, but the manufacturer makes a little baking insert. It's about maybe 5-6 inches across. It's round. It might be about 4 inches high, and it also has its own lid. And I baked a cake in this. You pour the batter into it, then you set that into the slow cooker itself, cover the insert, but also cover the slow cooker. And in the case of this recipe, you didn't add any water around the outside of the insert or anything. It simply baked. And I was concerned, you know, well, how will I know when this is done? And the amount of time given was 2 to 3 hours. Well, I checked it at 2 hours, and it was still very gooey. It was starting to form crumbs, but it wasn't finished by any means. So I just left it go and checked it every about 15 minutes, and it took the full 3 hours for that to bake. So, you know, there is some variation there in the amount of time that these recipes suggest, so that if you have a higher-powered slow cooker, it probably wouldn't take you as long, but you've been alerted to the fact that you should begin to check after 2 hours.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Someone listening here in the station has a question for you.
Okay.
Do you have a brand name or a type of unit that you would recommend?
It's all right if I say.
I think so.
Okay.
You don't have any, you know, you don't have any interest in the company.
No,
okay.
I don't at all.
Okay.
I have both a Corning and a Rival.
Uh-huh.
And it was a Rival that had the insert, the baking insert, and also a stand that you can put into it, a rack that you can set a roast on, so that, you know, if there is more fat than you really want to have mixed into your the meat itself, you can put your roast on top of that and set that down into the pot. And I've had good success with both of them. So I don't lean toward one or the other. I was glad that these inserts were available because they're fun to use.
Yeah. Back to that last caller, though, who wants, you know, on low and high.
Right.
Or off low and high.
Yeah, and that's mine have only those three.
Yeah.
I purposely did that because I just wanted to keep it simple.
Keep it simple. But there's also, I know, I was really surprised people were doing breads and cakes, mm-hmm. and I was surprised by those recipes in the book.
Right.
But you don't really need to have a baking insert per se, even though that could be really handy.
Right.
Because there's a recipe in there that you use a coffee can.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I know that that works. Now, the one problem with the newer pots and a coffee can, the newer slow cookers tend to be a little more squat and a little more oval.
That's right.
The older ones were taller and a little more round, and you'll find that a 12-ounce coffee can or a 1-pound coffee can really fit better in the older, taller ones than in the newer, shorter varieties.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener. On the toll-free line, a caller in Effingham. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Sort of a related issue about cooking meats with vegetables. I've always heard that if in a slow cooker, if you cook meat with vegetables, the vegetables soak up the fat.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Well, it probably would mean that the any grease is absorbed by those vegetables and certainly by the sauce that they're in, much as it would be if you baked a beef stew in the oven. You can skim the fat the same as you can if you do it on top of the stove or in the oven, but you do risk some of that being absorbed by the vegetables, yes.
Well, my solution to it is to microwave the vegetables by taking, instead of using water with the vegetables, to take some of the fat from the meat, and then I still get the flavor, but not as much fat.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you can, if you want to, have the vegetables absorb some of the good broth and the drippings that have come from the meat. You can microwave them. Skim your meat before you put them in, but then add them to the slow cooker for the last 30 minutes or so and have them absorb some of that deep, rich, meaty flavor if you want to. Yeah, they're very adaptable, and I think many people, I've been impressed with the way they've taken very traditional oven recipes or even stovetop recipes and adapted them for use in the slow cooker. So I think they are an appliance that are very friendly to that sort of tinkering.
And also they really, because they're really good with the less expensive cuts of meat, that generally means a much leaner
That's right.
meat.
That's right. They're so, not as marbled.
Yeah.
Yes, and my favorite thing to do is to one day make a roast and then the next day with the leftovers to make vegetable soup. And that's been a favorite of my family
right.
growing up, always having memories of that. So thought I'd pass it on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Next, a listener on a cell phone on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello?
Hi there.
I'm afraid I'm going to get cut off, so I'll just make it short and sweet.
Okay.
I'm just interested to know how well rice does in slow cookers. I used to make rice growing up when a big stone cast iron pot with a crusty bottom, and it was my favorite kind of rice, which I don't even make that kind anymore. Do slow cookers enable you to make rice very well?
Yes, you can make rice from scratch in them. In fact, we have a recipe here. It recommends cooking the rice on high for 2 to 3 hours. I think you run the risk of it being overcooked if you put it in, let's say you're doing a dish that has meat, vegetables, and rice, and the meat and the vegetables need to be cooked for anywhere from 6 to 8 hours to get to the degree of tenderness that you want. If you have put the rice in for that entire time, it will not hold up very well. It will begin to get mushy and lose its form and its texture. So either I think you're better off adding it after it's cooked on the stovetop and putting it in just in the last 30 minutes or so, or cooking it completely by itself, as this one recipe recommends, on high for 2 to 3 hours, rather than having it in for the whole stretch. It will be unlikely to get crispy, as you described it, because all of the water or liquid that you put into a slow cooker stays there. because of the lid, the there's not an evaporation process, and so you don't give up liquid as you're sort of used to doing in the stove or even on top of the in the oven or even on top of the stove. Instead, that liquid is retained, and so I think rice needs to be watched carefully. It's very similar to pasta. I think if you put pasta in for the entire cooking time, you do risk having kind of mushy, undistinguished food at the end. So we recommend that, you know, it go in later or be cooked and then only add it at the very end.
Okay, very good. I want to thank that listener for his call. Next, we're going to go to caller on line 2 in Chicago.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Sounds very good. I was wondering what you thought of the other methods of cooking as being better or having their own special purpose, like pressure cooking or convection air cooking. Do you think those are, in terms of time, of course, they're quick and adaptable, but I like the idea of fix it and forget it. You know, you have to be on your toes constantly to see if you've got the right timing and temperature, depending on the size of whatever you're cooking. But what did you think of pressure cooking? Have you found that to be something you used to?
I have not had personal experience with it, but I have quite a number of friends and family members who do use pressure cookers, find them very convenient, and like what comes out of them. So I think that's just a whole other way to approach cooking when you're short on time and yet want to do it yourself and have a result that's both delectable and nutritious. This is really a whole other approach, and I don't see that one is superior to the other. I think
just a matter of time.
Yeah, it is. It's a different approach, and both accommodate lives that are too full.
I'd like to make a comment relative to those people who are saying about microwaving things and putting them into your food recipes, whatever. Recently, I've come upon research that indicates loss of nutritional value due to microwaving. Have you ever come upon any such research?
Well, I do read debates about whether, first of all, they're dangerous or whether they do retain as much of the food value as we've been led to believe. But then frequently I see that offset by other research that says, no, you know, it's really not a problem. And in fact, the food does retain more of its nutrients than if they're cooked long-term. So I'm not a scientist and I'm not a chemist, and I really can't speak beyond the debate that I read in the press.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we go to a listener in Earlville on line 4. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Margo. My question has to do about this issue of food reaching the proper temperature.
Good. I'm glad you called.
And I wondered if the cookbook addresses this issue of reaching and maintaining the right temperature to keep the food healthy.
Right. Well, what we have done is simply suggested that you cook it on high if it's the kind of food that really needs to have a particular temperature reached. If there's some question about it, many of the recipes begin on high so that, you know, any possible problem with bacteria forming and so on is taken care of in the first couple of hours and then cut back to low. That's the extent of it. We don't go into an extensive commentary on that, but certainly recognize that as a potential problem.
I want to thank the listener for raising that issue. I think it's a really important thing to keep in mind that you got to be aware of what you're cooking and you know, you got to be aware of what temperature you need to get to kill the bad stuff.
Yes. And I must say, back on recommending particular slow cookers, I have had some caution and have wondered whether the cookers that have a clock and a timer with them so that they will bring your cooker on at the appropriate time. You know, I think there is some risk of putting warm food into a cooker like that and having them set idly on the counter for several hours before they begin to cook. I think, rather, I would suggest that people put food in cold if they're going to attempt that sort of kind of cooking so that they minimize the risk of having bad things form while the food is sitting there waiting to begin being cooked.
Yeah. Also, you know, Phyllis, there's a tip in the book that I don't know is such a good idea. And that has to do with thawing meat in there. And I was kind of concerned about that. The meat can even be frozen when you put it in the slow cooker. Set the cooker on low and let the meat cook all night while you sleep. I don't know. What do you think?
And then I don't have the tip in front of me. Does it?
It's page 133 if you've got the book there.
It presupposes that the food is finished then when you get awake, or that it's only thawed when you get awake?
I think it must. Well, it doesn't really say.
Let the meat cook all night while you sleep.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think this maybe should have been written more clearly. I think what I have heard and what I've had people tell me they've done is to put something in frozen and not take a time to thaw it, but to simply extend the cooking a bit longer, cooking it maybe on low a bit longer, to ensure the fact that it's fully tender and thawed, but not that you use the slow cooker as a thawing process only.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk with another listener on line one, a listener in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have a 70s-era crock pot, which I had inherited and was sitting on my shelf for a long time and decided to test it out again. And frankly, I wasn't that impressed with it. Now, I haven't read your book, the guest book, to see what was perhaps new out in the world. But some of my concerns were this. You mentioned earlier that the earlier models, you could not remove the inner liner, and,
right.
and mine is that way. And so that, you know, struck me as being an inconvenience as far as washing it. Another concern that I have is that it... my cooker on low would not seem to maintain a true simmer, such as is recommended, say, if you wanted to make a nice tomato sauce. You know, they recommend a nice low simmer. Well, mine was plucking away at a real boil there, even on low. And another thing was that some of the things which would seem to be... prime targets for a slow cooker, such as doing spare ribs, I found that you have to do other procedures, such as browning the spare ribs in the oven first, or if you have a pot roast, you need to brown that in a Dutch oven or a stock pot first. And if you're going to do that, why not just finish cooking your pot roast in the Dutch oven that you already used to brown it? So I kind of missed out where the benefit was.
Where the convenience is.
Uh-huh.
Well, I have a number of recipes that people have submitted to us do recommend browning, and even hamburger, not just something like spare ribs or a roast that you'd like to get that browned flavor. The argument they make is that it enhances the final flavor, and if you're willing, you don't have to do that. It's really a matter of discretion. If you would like to enhance the final flavor, that's something you can do because a slow cooker does not brown like an oven does. And so you can get the benefit of that added quality and character to the finished meal if you're willing to invest a little bit more time and effort at the very beginning. Then you simply put that browned meat into the pot, add your other ingredients, and use it then as a slow cooker from there away. So rather than needing to be nearby because whatever you're making only needs to be cooked or baked for an hour or two, what you've done is added some of the features that other more traditional methods of cooking offer, but you've still then used the slow cooker aspect to make it a more convenient tool for the life you live.
Yes, but in your experience, do slow cookers really cook slowly, or as in my experience, do they, even on low, mine was, you know, really holding away there.
Well, how full was it, too?
It was pretty full.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think that's probably, it may be a case of its age, and that the newer ones are calibrated a little bit more truly, you know, a lower, low means low. Low is 200 degrees, and high would be at a significantly higher temperature. But I don't know. I think what you're pointing out is perhaps a case of an older pot that wasn't quite as... the detail was not there in the way they are now in the more
and it could it could be quite old, and you know they don't last forever. I guess even though they can last for a long time.
Yeah, they certainly can.
Let's talk with another listener. Let's go next to a caller on line three. I think is next, southeastern Illinois.
Yes, I have a question, Miss Quinn. At the beginning, in listing the types of food that could be prepared in the cooker, mentioned beverages, and I've been trying to think of what kind of beverages. Could you run over those?
Sure.
Yeah, these are hot ones, of course. Punches, and let me just turn here to...
mulled wine.
Yeah, the kind
cider.
Of thing that you're glad to have hot, especially if you have guests and want to have something there that's available as the evening wears on.
Spiced cider, mulled cider.
Now, these really wouldn't be cooked for a very long time. Then,
no.
They don't require cooking for that length of time.
Just
but
really
again,
heat them.
The convenience of the pot is that they'll stay hot and at a very low temperature, but and they don't need constant tending.
Hot cranberry punch, which is cranberry juice, cinnamon, lemonade, and orange juice. That sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm. They're great on a buffet. They're great if you're having a party and want to just have it there throughout an evening and yet hold its temperature but not boil.
Okay, well, that answers the question. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's see. Next, we're going to go to line two, a caller in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. I didn't catch the title of the book, for one thing. And secondly, I wanted to know, I like to cook. I have a slow cooker, but it's pretty small, and I have a big stock pot that holds like about 30, 35 cups. Are there any slow cookers that you could recommend that are that big?
I'm not aware of any. The largest that I have seen, I think, are 6-quart. So that would be times 4, would be 24 cups.
Okay.
But, you know, a number, by the way, the name of the cookbook is Fix It and Forget It Cookbook.
Okay.
Feasting with Your Slow Cooker.
Okay.
A number of people who are really... quite active users of slow cookers have several. And, you know, they may have a 1-quart, a 4-quart, a 5-quart, and so on. And so that if you do want to do something that produces quite a quantity, you could have several going at once.
And what brand was it of the 6-quart one? Where did I find it?
I think Rival has one. I think Corning does. Really, I think probably there are others out there.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. And one more caller this afternoon, a listener in Decatur on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Does lamb work out well in a crock pot? Yes.
And I think we do have, I haven't tried it myself, but we did have, we have a lamb shanks recipe. Let me just, baked lamb shanks. And these all were tested and only put into the cookbook if they got good evaluation. So I would, based on that, assume that it works. This calls for cooking it on low for 8 to 10 hours or on high 4 to 6 hours.
So not something like a leg of lamb wouldn't work as well then?
I don't know about that, but I would think it might.
The shank is generally a little tougher.
Right. I don't know if I'd put a leg of lamb. That's such a nice... piece of meat. I don't know. I'd put it in a crock pot.
You would certainly want to watch it very carefully and make sure that it isn't being overdone.
Yeah, but shanks would be a good, that'd be a great idea to try that. This sounds pretty sophisticated little recipe here.
Yeah, it does.
Onion, one medium onion thinly sliced, carrots, little celery, 3 lamb shanks, cracked, 1 to 2 cloves garlic, little salt, pepper, oregano, thyme, bay leaves, white wine, 1/2 cup, 8 ounces tomato sauce.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty good. Well, I think we got folks inspired here this afternoon.
Well, I hope so. Yeah. It's a very practical cookbook, but we've just put our finger on one that's, you know, the kind of very special recipes as well.
Yeah, yeah. Special recipes, but I would say most are really, you know, just down-home comfort food.
That's true.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Okay, and that's probably... I would say that's probably the appeal of this book.
I think it is, without a doubt.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon. And
thank you for having me.
I hope we'll talk again sometime.
Thank you, and I hope people who have the cookbook really enjoy it.
Thank you very much. Phyllis Pellman Good has been our guest here in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. She and Don Rank are the compilers of the Fix It and Forget It cookbook, Feasting with Your Slow Cooker.